All right, we have been in the book of Proverbs for quite some time now. Tonight we're at chapter 25. And tonight at chapter 25, we begin the second collection of Proverbs by King Solomon that goes all the way to chapter 29. We're almost finished with this book of Proverbs. His first collection was from chapter 10 to chapter 24. So now we take the second one from 25 to 29. When we get to chapter 30 and 31, they're different people. It's no longer Solomon who is teaching. Chapter 25 deals with instructions for kings and his subjects on the fear of God and righteousness. And the chapter has two parts to it. First, it addresses the kings and the court in verses 1 to 10. And then it deals with conflict and conduct in verses 11 to 28. So chapter 25, verse 1, these also are proverbs of Solomon, which the men of Hezekiah, king of Judah, copied. So the proverbs in chapter 25 to 29 were composed by Solomon, but they were copied some 250 years later by the men of Hezekiah, king of Judah. There are 140 proverbs corresponding to the numerical value of the letters in the Hebrew alphabet of the name Hezekiah. He goes on, he says, "It is the glory of God to conceal a matter, but the glory of kings is to search out a matter. As the heavens for height and the earth for depth, so the heart of kings is unsearchable. Take away the dross from silver, and it will go to the silversmith for jewelry. Take away the wicked from before the king, and his throne will be established in righteousness. Do not exalt yourself in the presence of the king, and do not stand in the place of great men. For it is better that he says to you, 'Come up here,' than that you should be put lower in the presence of the prince whom your eyes have seen." So God hide some of his knowledge from king, and kings hide some of their knowledge from their subject. Rulers responsible for knowing what is going on and investigating issues fully, in verse 2, do not need to reveal everything they know. Search out in verse 2, unsearchable in verse 3, connect these two verses. The mysterious way in which God governs the world actually reveals his glory. It points to the working of an infinite wisdom that is inexplicable by men. The main glory of God is his mysteriousness in verse 2. The glory of God to conceal a matter, the glory of king to search out the matter. On the other hand, kings are human beings. Often their actions are as difficult to comprehend as the heights of the heavens or the depths of the earth, verse 3. Now, verse 3 is one of many verses in chapter 25 and 26 that makes comparison using the words like or as. There are 12 comparisons in chapter 25, and there are 13 in chapter 26. Just as undesirable dross is removed from silver, so wicked people are to be removed from the king. He never had tolerance for idiots in his courtroom. So getting rid of wicked people in verse 5 enables the king to have a righteous reign. As the dross must first be removed, so the wicked counselor who exercises an evil influence upon the king, he must be removed in order to establish righteousness in the kingdom. It is wrong for a person to try to promote himself to a king, claiming to be great when he is not. It is far better for the king to promote him than for the king to humiliate him in front of a nobleman. Jesus talked about this and he illustrated this in a parable in Luke chapter 14, verses 7 to 10. In the next section, verses 8 to 10 here, there are two warnings. Plus, there was one that we just saw in verse 6. Warning number one is against rashly taking another person to court in verse 8. Do not go quickly to court, for what will you do in the end when your neighbor has put you to shame? So the reason is that the plaintiff may lose the case and be ashamed. What he thought he saw may not have actually taken place. The next warning, number two, is against betraying a friend's confidence. In verse 9, that should be taught in high school. As a result, the friend may shame him, and the plaintiff may have a permanent loss of reputation. Verse 10, lest he who hears it expose your shame, and your reputation is ruined. So it is risky business to accuse others publicly, like in court. Warning number three is in verse 6. It's against exalting himself in the presence of the king. So Solomon offered three warnings to the would-be aristocrats concerning how they should behave in the presence of the king. Today, it does not happen to us. If it's the president or one of those things, they're so surrounded by all kinds of protection and we don't have to worry. But in those days, they had access to the king and they had to know how to behave. At verse 11, now we have the second part, dealing with conflict and conduct. He said, a word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in settings of silver, like an earring of gold and an ornament of fine gold, is a wise reprover to an obedient ear. Like the coal of snow in time of harvest, is a faithful messenger to those who send him, for he refreshes the soul of his masters. Whoever falsely boasts of giving is like clouds and wind without rain. By long forbearance, a ruler is persuaded, and a gentle tongue breaks a bone. The observation in this section are about speech. An appropriate and properly timed word, which sometimes may even be a rebuke, can be attractive and it can be very valuable, like gold apples set in a silver setting, he says in verse 11, or like a gold earring in some ornament of fine gold, verse 12. So the proverb pushes the value of correction, something that we can hardly do anymore. If you try to discipline even a mature Christian, they will not take it, they will simply leave the church. Very difficult today to discipline someone. Reproof tactfully given at the right time and willingly received is as valuable, Solomon says, as an ornament of fine gold. Snow in the mountains is refreshing during the heat of harvest time, Solomon says in verse 13. Similarly, a trustworthy messenger is refreshing to one who sent him. We saw that in chapter 13, verse 17. An unreliable messenger is referred to in chapter 10, verse 26, and again next chapter, 26, verse 6. Clouds and wind usually give farmer promise of rain. It is exciting to them when they see that it is coming. But if no rain comes, the farmers are deeply disappointed. Similarly, people who claim they will give something but never keep their promises, they are frustrating to the supposed recipients. Verse 14 that we just read here. Whoever falsely boasts of giving is like a cloud and wind without rain. A person ought not to promise anything if he knows that he cannot follow through. And then we have the gentle tongue in verse 15. It can be remarkably influential, accomplishing far more than loss of temper or harsh words. Very hard to correct when you lose your temper. You lose the person. It's very hard to get back. So a gentle tongue is much better. Breaking a hard bone is an unusual figure of speech. How can a tongue break a bone? But the idea is that softly spoken words can accomplish very difficult things. That's just the idea. It is not literal, but it's for us to understand the concept. With a gentle tongue, you can, you know, the sweet talkers, they get away with murder. Then persuading a ruler to follow a difficult course of action takes patience. An aristocrat must show forbearance. So we see five observations here. First one is in verse 11, appropriate speech. The next one is in verse 12. We see the value of correction. The third one is in verse 13, the faithfulness of the messenger. Then number four, we see make good on all promises. If you're going to make a promise, make good on it. And then verse 15, we have the last one is forbearance and the gentle tongue. You don't have to be mean to get things done. In verses 16 and 17, the warning is regarding moderation. First, the aristocrat should possess moderation in eating. Verse 16, have you found honey? Eat only as much as you need, lest you be filled with it and vomit. So even if one is consuming honey, he should not overindulge, lest he become sick and throws up. Honey here signifies anything that is desirable, anything that is loved, anything that is dear to our heart. We should not overdo. We should be very careful not to overindulge. There are people who cannot control themselves. They go all the way, all the time for anything. We should not be. Even if it is something good, something that we like honey, overindulgence will cause excess and will eventually cause hatred. So just as eating too much honey can cause a problem, so visiting a neighbor too often may cause him to hate the frequent visitor in verse 17. Seldom set foot in your neighbor's house, lest he become weary of you and hate you. Well, that's not my problem. I go very seldom to people's home. But moderation in visiting. Overdoing it can be a problem. The Greek word translated there seldom is literally make precious. That is, make it valuable. Make it a rarity, a scarcity. When they see you, they're so excited. They're so happy to see you. Come on in, man. It's been a long time. It's much better than being a nuisance. That you again. Oh, man, he's here, the guy again. You believe it, he's here again. But he should visit enough so that his visit is valued, appreciated, rather than over-visiting. He's always there, and then, man, tired of him. Then verse 18, Solomon says, a man who fears false witness, who bears false witness against his neighbor, is like a club, a sword, and a sharp arrow. Confidence in an unfaithful man in time of trouble is like a bad tooth and a foot out of joint. Like one who takes away a garment in cold weather, and like vinegar on soda, is one who sings songs to a heavy heart. So giving false testimony in court against a neighbor can crush, can divide, can pierce like a club, like a sword, or like an arrow, verse 18. Lying can wound a person's character, and it can even destroy his life as effectively as destroying it with any weapons. There is a power that we have in the tongue, and many people have been destroyed by the speech of other people. A bad tooth, a foot out of joint, can really be a serious problem because a person relies on them to walk the foot and to eat the tooth. Likewise, relying on a person who turns out to be untrustworthy can be disappointing and can be troublesome, verse 19. Job expressed that concern over his friend in Job chapter 6. An example of an unreliable person is one who lies in court. Verse 18, we'll see that. So trying to perk up a person who is totally discouraged or depressed by singing happy song, Solomon says, is as cruel as stealing his garment in cold weather, verse 20. It is also like pouring vinegar on soda. It is useless and it causes a violent reaction. So by being insensitive and uncaring does much harm. We need to be sensitive with people. If they're going through some difficulty, it's not time to just joke around and try to bring them up. May not be the right time. So three comparisons are made. The first one is comparing one who bears false witness against his neighbor to some weapon, either a club, a sword, or a sharp arrow in verse 18. The next one is comparing misplaced confidence to a broken tooth or a dislocated foot in verse 19. And the third one is comparing untimely cheerfulness to no garment in the cold or vinegar on soda, verse 20. In verses 21 and 22, Solomon talks about disarming an enemy. He admonishes his readers to repay evil with good. Even an enemy should be fed when he is hungry. He should be given water when he is thirsty. Verse 21, if your enemy is hungry, give him bread to eat. If he is thirsty, give him water to drink. We also saw that in 2 Kings chapter 6, verse 22. Friendly action of this kind, so unexpected, so undeserved, will have a sort of a painful effect upon an enemy, like piling burning coals on his head. And that was quoted by Paul later in Romans 12:20. That inner pain has a beneficial effect. It leads to remorse. And also God will reward the brotherly act by bestowing his blessing on the person. So the expression here may sound weird to us, but sometimes a person's fire went out in those days. And he did not have a lighter like we have today, or even book of matches. He needed to borrow some live coals in order to restart his fire. So giving a person coals in a pan that they would carry home, and he would carry it on his head, was a neighborly thing to do. It was a kind thing to do. And it made friends instead of enemies. So Solomon used that as an expression here. Verse 23. The north wind brings forth rain, and a backbiting tongue brings forth an angry countenance. It is better to dwell in a corner of the housetop than in a house shared with a contentious woman. And the men said, Amen. So cold water is to a weary soul, as cold water is to a weary soul, so is good news from a far country. A righteous man who falters before the wicked is like a murky spring in a polluted well. It is not good to eat much honey, so to seek one's own glory is not glory. Whoever has no rule over his own spirit is like a city broken down without walls. So here we have the final six observations from Solomon. The first one is against slander, verse 23. Backbiting and slander angers people. As surely as the north wind brings a cold rain, so will the cunning, slanderous tongue produce an angry countenance. The next observation is in verse 24. It is against contention. A quarrelsome wife makes life miserable. Better to live in miserable surroundings than in a spacious house with such a woman. And I know it is only talking about women, but the same applies to the men. It's not one-sided. Our life should not be a life of argument and dispute. God is against contention. Solitude in cramped quarters with peace, Solomon says, is better than living in a spacious house with a crabby, contentious wife. And the verse is identical to chapter 21, verse 9, and chapter 21, verse 19. So Solomon said it three times. But like I said, you can reverse the gender and make it applicable to a man. Then the third one is verse 25, it is against independence. One must not choose to be a hermit, a loner. The impact of receiving good news from a friend or a relative who lives far away is like a refreshing drink of water to a tired person. In verse 25, in Bible times, news traveled very slowly. Consequently, long periods of anxious waiting usually followed the departure of a loved one or a friend to a distant land. So when they finally got news, man, that was like cold water. The next one, number four, is against cowardice or chickenness here. Verse 26. A righteous man who lets his reputation be compromised is like pure water being polluted, being ruined by mud or any other pollutant. The value of pure water in a dry country reinforced the statement. Water was dear to them. They need it, and they did not waste it. So once a spring or a well is contaminated. It may never be pure again. And it disappoints those who come to the well to drink from it. A righteous person who defects to sin disappoints others who looked up to him. And that's why the enemy loves to make religious leaders fall into sin, because it really affects a lot of people who were looking up to that leader. The conduct of a believer should be consistent and fearless, upholding what is right. He should be uncompromising in opposing sin. When such a person gives way to the wicked and compromises and no longer makes a stand for the truth, for purity, for virtue, he loses his character and he brings shame on the faith. Number 5 is in verse 27, against over-ambitiousness, seeking to exalt oneself, one's own honor, is as bad as overheating honey. Verse 16, we saw that. Both brings a problem. Glory, like honey, is a good thing, but being too engrossed with one's share of glory is like eating too much honey. So we have to be very careful against over-ambitionness. And there's a line that people can cross. It's nice to be ambitious, but there's a line not to cross, and now you become over-ambitious. The last one, verse 28, is against unruliness, disobedience. A person without self-restraint is like a city whose walls have been breached by an invading army. A person is defenseless against the attacks of his impulses when he is not the master of himself. You have to be able to rule your own self. An undisciplined person who lacks self-control is vulnerable to trouble. So that is chapter 25. The main lesson is the way to turn an enemy into a friend is to act friendly towards him. If it does not turn him, it will intensify his punishment. It will be it like piling coals of God's wrath upon his head, as we saw in verse 22. Now, chapter 26 is about bad character. The purpose of this chapter is to identify certain types of character that are to be avoided. So young ladies looking for men to be married, know chapter 26. We will see 4 different types of bad characters. Again, there are a lot of comparison in this chapter. It deals with wisdom instructing us against shameful conduct. The chapter has 4 parts because we see 4 different individuals. The first one is the fool in the first 12 verses. The next one is the lazy in verses 13 to 16. The third one is the contentious in verses 17 to 22. And finally, the worst of all, the malicious in verses 23 to 28. So first, the fool. Solomon says there, as snow in summer and rain in harvest, so honor is not fitting for a fool. Like a moving sparrow, like a flying swallow, so a curse without cause shall not alight. A whip for the horse, bridle for the donkey, and a rod for the fool's back. Do not answer a fool according to his folly, lest you also be like him. Answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own eyes. He who sends a message by the hand of a fool cuts off his own feet and drinks violence, like the legs of the lame that hang limp, is a proverb in the mouth of fools. Like one who binds a stone in a sling is he who gives honor to a fool. Like a thorn that goes into the hand of a drunkard is a proverb in the mouth of fools. The great God who formed all things gives the fool his hire and the transgressor his wages. As a dog returns to his own vomit, so a fool repeats his folly. Do you see a man wise in his own eyes? There is more hope for a fool than for him. So in the course of life, we must all interact with some people, and some people are kind of foolish. How should they be treated? This is the topic of these 12 verses. We see 10 things concerning the fool. Number one, in verse 1, a fool should not be given a position of honor. A fool in a post of honor is as harmful to society as abnormal weather. Snow in summer would be harmful to the crops. Rain in harvest would prevent picking up the produce of at the proper time and ruin it. So a fool should not be given a position of honor. Number two is in verse 2. A fool should not be feared. A fool might pronounce an undeserved curse on someone, but that curse will not fall upon the person for whom it was intended. Such unfounded outbursts of condemnation are like the birds that aimlessly and harmlessly fly through the sky. Balaam, the fool, tried to curse Israel in Numbers chapter 23, but he could not. So a fool should not be feared, really. Verse 2. Number 3, a fool should be disciplined with force. Verse 3, a whip is needed to keep a horse moving in the right direction. A donkey, being less willful than a horse, can be guided by a rein without a whip. So words of advice are insufficient to keep a fool on the right course. More forceful means have to be employed with such an individual. Number 4, a fool should not be debated on his own term. Verse 4. One should not degrade himself by answering a fool according to his folly, by stooping down to his level in an argument. You should not argue with him as if he were a sensible person. He is not. He is foolish. Number 5, in verse 5, a fool should be exposed and should be silent. One should answer a fool according to his folly. At times, a person must use the fool's language to refute the fool, so he does not become wise in his own eyes, verse 5. So the fool needs to be exposed and be shamed. Wisdom is needed to determine when to apply verse 4 and when to apply verse 5. The Jewish Talmud suggests that verse 4 pertains to foolish comments that can be ignored, and verse 5 refers to erroneous ideas that must be corrected. Number 6 is in verse 6, a fool should not be trusted, at least not with a verbal message. He most likely will distort the message, or he will deliver an incorrect version of it. So that foolish messenger is compared to the feet of the sender. By dispatching a fool with his message, the sender is hindering himself. The fool will not do him any good. The message does not get delivered. Even worse, if it is delivered, the wrong message may incense the recipient, who is assuming it is correct and will harm the sender. So therefore, by sending the fool, the sender, Solomon said, the sender is drinking violence to himself. It's not good. Don't use them. Number 7, verses 7, and again in verse 9, a fool should not be listened to. A parable in the mouth of a fool is as useless as the legs of a cripple. Verse 7, it falls lame from his mouth, offers no instruction at all to others, makes no impact upon the hearers. In fact, a parable in the mouth of a fool is like a thorn in the hand of a drunkard, and it is hurtful. Verse 9. Number 8, a fool should not be praised. Verse 8. Paying honor to a fool is as futile as tying a stone in a slingshot. A fool cannot live up to the honor bestowed on him. That honor remains as useless to him as the stone that cannot be thrown from the sling. It is tied in there. It's totally useless. Number 9, a fool should not be hired. Verse 10, to hire a fool or one just passing by to perform a task is like hiring a reckless archer. That incompetent fool will do more harm than any good. If one wants a task to be completed, he must hire an expert, someone that can do it, but not a fool. And then the last one, verse 10, number 10, verses 11 and 12, a fool should be regarded as incurable. A fool repeats his mistakes, even though he has suffered harm from them previously. He is like a dog who returns to his own vomit, verse 11. And Peter used it in 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 22. Even worse than the fool is one who is wise in his own eyes, verse 12. Why? Because a fool who is conscious of his lack of wisdom may be set right. But one who considers himself perfect, needing no improvement at all, is beyond cure. You cannot help that person. His case is hopeless. And then pride closes the door on self-improvement. So a fool is better off than one who is wise in his own eyes. So that's the first part, and that's dealing with the fool. Verse 13, start the second part, the second character, the lazy. And in verses 13 to 16, Solomon addresses the lazy, and he says four things about him. Number one, in verse 13, he says the lazy is full of excuses. The lazy man says there's a lion in the road, a fierce lion in the street. He looks for any excuse to stay home and avoid work. Even the most far-fetched excuses, like saying a lion is roaming loose in the street. What would a lion do in a city? Number two, in verse 14, the lazy loves to sleep. He tosses and turns on his bed like a door swings on its hinges. The door makes no progress beyond its confined sphere of motion. Go left, go right. It stays there. So the lazy person turns himself on his bed from side to side, but never leaves the bed and never do any works. So the lazy loves to sleep. Number three, verse 15. The lazy avoids the smallest effort. When he finally gets out of his bed, this bum buries his hand in the dish. And we saw that in chapter 19, verse 24. He is so lazy that he cannot spend the energy to bring his hand that's in the food back to his mouth. What a guy. Stay away from him. The lazy man buries his hand in the bowl, and it wearies him to bring it back to his mouth. In verse 16, the last one, the lazy is arrogantly opinionated. He is too lazy to undergo the mental discipline that would enable him to give an intelligent reply in discussing issues. He considers research to be an unnecessary weariness of his flesh. The sluggard is wiser in his own eyes than seven men who can answer sensibly. So he flatters himself that he is quite able, without studying, to give a suitable answer to any question that is presented to him. He's a smart aleck. Yet he considers himself wiser than seven men who collectively, cautiously, have given an opinion in the matter. So he is quite a character, that lazy one. So we got the fool, we got the lazy one. Verse 17, we start the third part, the third character, the contentious. That's another character to beware. He who passes by and meddles in a quarrel, not his own, is like one who takes a dog by the ears. I was told they don't like it. Like a madman who throws firebrands, arrows, and death is the man who deceives his neighbor and says, I was only joking. Where there is no wood, fire goes out. And where there is no gossiper, talebearer, strife ceases. As charcoal is to burning coals and wood to fire, so is a contentious man to kindle strife. The words of a talebearer are like tasty trifles, and they go down into the inmost body. So here we have four undesirable behaviors of a contentious person. They are exposed here in verses 17 to 22. Number one is in verse 17. What does he do? He meddles in the strife of others. He was just passing by, and yet he stopped to inject himself in the quarrel. Such a person is courting danger. He is like one who takes a dog by the ears and he gets bitten. So stay away from that kind of people. Number two, he excuses misconduct as a practical joke, verses 18 and 19. He deceives his neighbors, and then he excuses himself by saying, oh, I was only joking. When a person has injured a neighbor by lies or malice, saying that it was only a joke is not acceptable. It's not a proper behavior to hinder someone or hurt them and say, I was only joking. Bad joke. The injury is no less real, just because it was done as a prank. Such a person is like one who recklessly throws firebrands or arrows. Someone is bound to get hurt. Firebrands, they are darts with some burning material attached to them. So that's misconduct of the contentious. Number three, verses 20 and 21, he delights in fueling the fires of controversy. This he may do through slander, false reports, or innuendos. As a fire must have fresh fuel in order to continue burning, so contention is kept alive by gossip. Verse 20, others are more openly contentious. They throw more coals and more wood on the fires of controversy. Verse 21. So you got two types of people, but they delight in fueling the fires of controversy. And then number four, in verse 22, he loves to hear gossip. The words of a talebearer are sweet to him as tasty trifles, something delightful to gossipers. They are taken into the innermost part of the body, meaning that they are eaten and enjoyed and digested. They do it on a regular basis. And then the last part, verse 23, the fourth character we see it gets worse and worse as we go. You start with the fool, and then you go with the lazy, the contentious, and then you get the malicious. That's the worst of the kind. Three types of maliciousness are mentioned here. Verse 23, fervent lips with a wicked heart are like earthenware covered with silver dross. He who hates disguises it with his lips and lays up deceit within himself. When he speaks kindly, do not believe him, for there are seven abominations in his heart. Though his hatred is covered by deceit, his wickedness will be revealed before the whole congregation. Whoever digs a pit will fall into it, and he who rolls a stone will have it rolled back on him. A lying tongue hates those who are crushed by it, and a flattering mouth works ruin. So here we have three types of maliciousness here. The first one is hypocrisy in verse 23. Hypocrites express friendship fervently with their lips, and yet their hearts are wicked. They plot the ruin of others who are reassured into a false sense of security by their fervent lips. They talk big. They pretend affection. And you have an example. The pretended affection of Judas, the betrayer, illustrates the point perfectly. Such people are like the silver of dross. That is the vile metal that is left after the pure silver has been refined. This inferior silver was used to overlay pottery, the earthen vessel in our pottery. And it would give the vessel the appearance of being valuable, but it was not. The point is that the glittering exterior often hides the ugliness that is within. And then the second one, verses 24 to 27, is hatred. Some people are full of hatred, and yet they fake friendship with friendly speeches. Such a person lays up deceit until an opportunity comes to vent his animosity, verse 24. So the chronic hater hides his enmity with gracious words. Speak sweeting, evil heart. Look out for that person. It's a malicious person. Solomon advises his reader to put no trust in the pleasant words of such a man. Within the heart of that man are seven abominations, he said, verse 25. We don't know what the abominations are, but his heart is filled with abomination. Hatred is frequently concealed with deceit. Sooner or later, his hatred will be revealed. The matter is then brought before the whole congregation in verse 26. At that time, the fate of the hater is made clear. Solomon makes a note in verse 27 about men's evil recoiling upon himself. The person who maliciously digs a pit with the intention of injuring another person, that one will fall into his own pit. Whoever attempts to roll a stone upon another shall be crushed by that same stone. As you have done to others, it shall be done to you, Bible says. There is a story about a Frenchman named Louis. And he was asked to make chains during one of the early French wars. He wanted chains that would be used to hold the most despicable prisoners. So make me some good chains. And he tempered some with very fine steel, and he made those chains that were unparalleled for strength. Later, Louis was found guilty of treason, and he was sent to prison. And he was heard moaning, These are my own chains. If I had known I was forging them for myself, how differently I would have made them. So that's what we have here. Better be careful what you do. It will come back on you. And then the third one, verse 28, is deceit. A liar selects as the objects of his slander those whom he hates. The person with a smooth mouth conceals his real thought. His intention is to bring about somebody's downfall. Has no heart for people. So the main lesson of this chapter 26 is God has given us two ears, two eyes, but only one tongue. It is important that we look and hear more than we speak, for we cannot recover our words. So we are almost finished with the book of Proverbs. Next week we'll continue next two chapters till you read chapter 27 and 28. The one thing that stands out for me tonight is how to handle disputes properly. Dispute and conflict will arise between neighbors. They even arise between Christians. They originated at the beginning when there were few people on the earth, Genesis 3, when each person blamed the other. We should do all we can to avoid conflicts. But if they arise, we need to be able to resolve them. And in our text tonight, we see how to handle them. We see what to do and what not to do. First, we see seven things not to do. Do not exalt yourself, Solomon said. Remain humble. Pride only intensifies any conflict. Number two, do not be too quick to go to court. You might not be right. Number three, do not disclose secrets to others. Do not bring anyone else into the dispute. Number four, do not boast. No one appreciates boasters. Number five, do not spread slander. Backbiting angers people. So avoid this. Number six is do not compromise. Do not be contaminated by the pollution of others. And number seven, do not seek your own glory. Too much ambition makes people sick. Then we see four things to do. Seven not to do, but four to do. And the first one is talk to the person privately. Try to settle these things between the two of you. Then number two, watch your words, your tone of voice. Use what Solomon called fitly spoken words. Remember what he said, a gentle tongue can break a bone. Number three, be compassionate with all people, even an enemy. Provide for his need. You're going to blow his mind. And then number four, rule your own spirit. Patience, self-control, very important. So these are the things to do and not to do in order to resolve conflicts and dwell together in unity. We know that God blesses the peacemaker, Jesus said in Matthew 5:9. So let God's wisdom direct you and use you to be peacemaker, to make peace. May the Lord be with you. May the Lord bless each and every one of you who came tonight to spend time with the Lord. May he bless your life, bless your work starting tomorrow. May he go before you. May he use you in settling conflict and being peacemakers wherever you go.